Hello, everyone.
Yeah,
Thanks for
no.
joining us. I'm Jason Bosch, and I'm here with Allison McDowell and Shai Danon in Tel Aviv, Israel. And we're going to be talking about human capital finance and Israel, what's going on in Israel. So thanks for joining us. If you can, please share this live stream with others. And
Yeah,
Shai, do you want to just introduce yourself real quick? While Allison is sharing the link.
Yes, great. I mean, to be honest, I'm from the Golan Heights, not from Tel Aviv.
My
And
bad, sorry.
thankfully, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Thankfully, I'm in the north, and I'm surrounded with the blue sky and some clean air and trees and birds, and so this is good. And it's not like cement blocks and buildings. And my name is Shai Danon. I'm doing what I'm doing and trying to let others know the truth for 12 years, more or less, and obviously more so in the last 1 year since this story with the corona started. I met Allison, 4 months ago. I came across one of her videos, and I was like, yes, I love her brain. I love the way she thinks, the way she puts out the information, the way she connects the dots. And immediately I contacted her, and we were like in touch, and we did like a very long presentation. And to be honest, Allison, I'm still getting a lot of comments about it. And
Oh,
it's still
okay.
on YouTube. It hasn't been removed yet.
I know. Well, see, because we're just talking about the finance, so
Yeah,
not
exactly.
on to us yet.
And I translated it, but not on YouTube, but on my other platform, which is a new platform because I was deleted from my account. I had few of them. They were deleted from YouTube, and I was censored on Facebook, etc., and from Patreon. And basically, I mean, the audience know Allison, but I really appreciate your work because you're coming from a really fresh angle. And it's not just fresh, it's an angle which has no, dark conspiracy in it, although we know it's connected. It comes from the money side, it comes from the bonds, the new capitalism that we are heading to. And this is A, it's fascinating. B, it's real. C, people can relate to it once they understand it, once it clicks in their brain that this is what's happening beneath the surface. And it's been happening for many, many years. I mean, this has been planned for many years. It's not something you start in January till March, it's not the way it works. So I really appreciate your work, Allison. And thank you, Jason, for having me, obviously.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, the reason I thought it was important to talk because you had been reaching out. Now we're seeing, a year into this process that now the technological systems, the tracking systems are coming online, right? So now they have, the injection protocols, the medical protocols, and they're linking them to the digital records. So can you speak a little bit to the PAS system and what it looks like on the ground where you are?
Well, what has been
What you're
happening in the
hearing from
last
other
few months?
places?
Yeah, actually, the other day, this was not yesterday, maybe it was yesterday morning, I was talking with Enrico Dell'Olio. He's in Italian, he lives in Tenerife, but he used to live in Estonia. And I told him about Estonia and your work, your research, and the fact I knew about Estonia from you. And yesterday morning, we did like a 40 minutes interview. And he told me about Estonia. He used to live there. He has many friends there. He tried to tell them to come on board and to do a live show. And really, once you understand Estonia is the model, I mean, it's partly Estonian, partly Chinese, if I could say that. I didn't know that from 2006, Estonia has a digital government already. I mean, all the government issues are online. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't need to stand in line for any documents, which sounds really good and cool. But apparently, all the data of Estonian residents, I don't like the word citizen, but residents, it's in a little card with a chip. So basically, it's your social security, your tax, entering to various venues. I think also driving or going on public transportation. a lot of things are put into this card. Now, obviously, we know it's just a phase. You know, there's more to it. It's not going to end up with just a card. But they've been living in such a way for many, many years now. And I never knew about it. So Enrico told me about it and told me how it's happening in Estonia. Obviously, it's not doom and gloom like China, for example, and the social credit system is there, but not really there. But what he said is really interesting, because they put the foundation in Estonia since many years. Now, with a press of a button, they can basically reach all Estonians and change the status from what it is now to social crediting, for example. So it's quite easy now to go to the next phase. Now, regarding Israel, why I did this interview with Enrico, in order to tell Israel is where we are heading, you know, and this is thanks to your work and some other, obviously, the work of many other researchers. And basically, Israel, since the last 3 months, since all these jabs started, these shots, these genetic modifying substances, and the government has been lying to its people, telling it's good, this is a vaccine, it will put them out of the misery of the pandemic. But no one told them at first that they are part of an experiment. No one told them it will be like, if you don't take the shot, you cannot walk, you cannot eat, you cannot go to this shop or the other. And now what is happening in Israel is more or less half of the population has taken, more or less, again, it's not about the numbers now, but more or less half of the population has taken at least one shot. Most of them have taken two shots already. Now, it's funny because at first, Bibi Netanyahu said that this corona is bullshit, is nothing, it's fake, okay. Then he said, no, it's like biblical size pandemic. Then he said, no worries, one shot and we're behind it. Then he said, well, we probably need two shots. Now, the other week, he said he ordered 36 million more shots. Now, that means that every 6 months, at least for now, every 6 months, those who have taken the shots will have to take every 6 months another shot. And this is quite amazing, I think, because they are lying bluntly in our face. This is one thing. Second thing, without going into the medical stuff, if it happens that the body becomes addicted or dependent on these substances, this is a big problem. I mean, medically and health-wise, this is a really, really huge problem. In terms of the segregation, that is, it really feels like the 30s in Germany. I mean, I was not there, thankfully, but it does feel a bit like the 30s in Germany, and I call it on steroids even. And I really hope that we don't go to the 40s on steroids in Germany, because this is really, really nasty. Basically, the population has now, according to the government and the media and the big banks and the big businesses, which are acting not according to the law. I mean, everything that is happening now in Israel, it's illegal. It's not lawful.
They've just respect, yeah.
Yeah, no, they put it out on the media and everyone's starting to comply because this is what they used to do, but it's illegal. It's illegal to tell someone you cannot eat here because you didn't take this or this genetic
so
stuff
what
or whatever.
System? Is it through the health system that they're tracking? Because Israel is very advanced in having health, electronic health records. That's one of the big areas of economic development, isn't it, in Israel, is around the health system and the health records, so it's on phones.
I tell you, it's more than that, because now they are combining the health system with the education system.
Yes.
Like last week, a doctor who has a conflict of interest with Pfizer, and she's going on TV and saying, I suggest that Pfizer will start experimenting on the children of Israel. Like that, on the Israeli night news, you know, she's saying that out in the open, and people don't see there's something strange here. And that's my worry, the people who don't see that it's where it's going. Now, when a doctor is going on live TV and saying something like that, and on the basically what we see is that the health system starting to work really closely with the education system. And now many shots, never mind now Corona, but the MMR vaccine and many vaccines like that are being administered in school. And the parents who would like to go back to work, they send their kids and they sign something. They have no idea even what they are signing. So basically, they are allowing the health system to do.
For the children, do they need a pass to go to school in person now?
They get, it's not a pass, but the parents need to sign something. And the children at the moment, they get a QR code on their bags. I mean, this is one step. I know it's happening also in other countries, not just in Israel. And this has started in Israel more than 6 months ago, this QR code. Now they are putting more pressure. And I know they will go, I mean, the companies, the contractors for the health office who are doing all sorts of checkups and probably some of the shots. I don't like to call them vaccines because they are not, but right. They're doing the checkups and some of the shots. These companies, two companies, contractors, have been bought by Chinese cartels. So basically, the health office in Israel have taken two other companies, well, actually Chinese companies, and he hired them to do these things in Israeli education system. Now, again, this is illegal to administer medicine, vaccines, or just genetic modifying substances into children in the education system. This is really bad. I mean, it's going to a really, really dark place. And most parents, they want their life back and they don't see they are being manipulated. So right. The health system...
Bigger base.
What?
They don't understand that it is even beyond this current health situation, that there is a much larger tracking program that's coming.
Indeed. And you combine this, Alison, with the security system. I mean, the security and intelligence offices and branches of government in Israel are part of it, because most of the technology, I mean, we know the technology of tracking is coming from the army and the branches of the army and 8200 unit, you know? I mean, there's more units, but I'm just saying 8200 as a code name for these sorts of branches who deal with intelligence and tracking people, etc. They used to do it on terrorists, so we were told. Now it's being done on our people, so we are told. So this joint forces between the health office, the education office, and I would say branches of the army or the intelligence service, this is really worrying. And obviously it's an understatement. I mean, even I, which I know quite a bit, I'm shocked from what I still don't know and how these planners have planned their daily progress of this agenda. And there's no surprise. I mean, every day I discover more and I realize there's no surprise why they have decided the beginning of this crisis to hide the files and their discussions at the beginning from the Corona cabinet, you know, when they came together and discussed what's going on about the Corona. And they've decided to hide these files for 30 years. To keep them off the public domain, so the public will not know what is going to happen. Now, I know they did it in order to hide the fact it's a plan. They've got these files, whether it's from the UN or the WHO or Switzerland and the WEF, doesn't matter now who they got it from, but they got a plan and they need to stick to it. You know,
it's a global plan. And it also has this close intersection of, as you mentioned, technology that is coming out of Israel, but it interfaces with technology in the United States and the United Kingdom in particular. There's a lot of fluidity. These companies, the Microsofts, the IBMs, the Oracles, Salesforce, they have a footprint in all of the countries, and they're running these deals, the biosecurity deals in all of the countries. And so because of the social welfare system that is available to the people of Israel, that is a centralized place that they can, and a relatively small, not unlike Estonia, test bed, right? Where they can try to, you know, create a coercive situation and a cultural situation that people feel compelled to accept what's coming down. Because they don't have the larger fund. Would you like to show a couple of my slides at this point?
Please.
Yeah, so, please. Okay, no, and then maybe you can respond. This isn't the, you know, for those who haven't actually already watched it, Shai and I, back in December, we did a 4-hour presentation on all of this. So this is not nearly that, but it just hits on some of the highlights. So.
And Shai, while she's doing that, I'm curious, like what's the level of questioning all of this in Israel? Is there, are the people pretty much going along with it for the most part, or like what percentage do you think are questioning things?
Well, it's a good question, because I don't really know the numbers. It's just a feel I have from other people who tell me. Many, many people are waking up that something dodgy is happening. And I'm talking by the thousands and tens of thousands. Still, I'll take you to the first thing, more or less, that I've said. More or less half of the population have already taken these, at least the first shot, and a lot of them have taken two shots. So, for them to go against something they've done already, it's like really deep cognitive dissonance. It's really tricky. I mean, they divide the population in such a way psychologically, but now it's also physically divided the population. So people say, have you taken the shot? And I'm not supposed to tell them even, because it's confidential. And they made it in such a way that if you don't say it, obviously, you've not taken the shot. I mean, they assume that I've not taken the shot, and then I'm segregated from whatever service they are offering. It can be a cafe, it can be a bank or whatever, or a hotel. I mean, now they are starting to open the economy of Israel, but actually, within a few weeks, it's going to be Passover, and they're going to do another lockdown, basically. I'm just once.
Okay. So Jason, I'm just going to touch on, this is from the New York Times. So March 7th. So this is touching on the pass system. And you can see, I guess it's both a phone and a QR code, it looks like, or maybe that's your access to a concert. This looks like Ticketmaster. So that is the format. And again, I think we realize that we're being tracked on through our personal devices, right, and having our electronic records linked through these sensor networks, which now exist as phones, which may eventually either shrink into some smaller wearable technology or implantable technology into that system. So just to touch base again, to reiterate what Shai was saying about Estonia, is that Israel and Estonia are among a group of 10 so-called digital nations. And it started out, I think Israel was in the first cohort, like from 4, and then it grew up to now there's 10. And the idea is to shift every individual's relationship to the state to sort of a QR coded, a barcoded new metric. And the goal of this is to create an interoperable database, like a virtualized twin. We've talked about that a lot, a twin of someone in terms of how they use their public benefits and how they interface with the state. And because Israel has, you know, healthcare access, and they are very cutting edge on the electronic healthcare records, it's a very logical thing for then this program of medical interventions at a population level to start to live on these devices. And so what I bring to the equation is talking about the financial piece, and that really, you know, Gates and Gavi and the World Health Organization is meant to do is to jumpstart much of the globe into the creation of a digital identity system that has your biometrics attached and that is tracking these relationships. But it's not simply for the medical interventions. Increasingly, they're going to start to layer in other elements your education vouchers, your housing vouchers, your food, tracking you within smart environments. And that is all to essentially, as we move into this fourth industrial revolution, this great reset that the Davos World Economic Forum talks about, where millions of people will be thrown out of their jobs that they love and made obsolete by robots and avatars, they have to be able to manage those people. So they need to get them all trackable and predictable and available for risk analytics, but not simply to manage them within a surveillance scenario, but actually the world financiers, the big banks, the big insurance companies have come up with a new way to securitize people as debt burdens on their relationship to the state, whatever that state is, whether it's Israel, whether it's the United Kingdom, whether it's the United States. They predictably profile you as a debt burden based on what they think you will need in terms of public services, whether that is maintaining your physical health, your mental health, your training. All of those things are going to be packaged. And that is called social impact finance, or pay for success finance, that's tied to the sustainable development goals. And what's key here is there's an individual that is I'm hoping is getting a little bit more acknowledgement in this. And Raul Diego did a really good piece for Mint Press this past week about human capital finance that mentioned social finance Israel specifically. It's called like Bits and Bytes, the Silicon Icarus. I highly recommend it. But if you look at that article, you can see that Ronald Cohen, who is a resident of the United Kingdom, he was born in Egypt. His family fled Egypt. He grew up in the United Kingdom, but he has very close ties to Israel through his wife. And so he started in the United Kingdom a fund to seed, because this is all these pilot projects getting started. It's a very long lead time, Shai, as you have said, this very long lead time to start pilot projects in speculative finance around human capital, tracking human capital, predicting human capital. And so this was started again in the United Kingdom, which has more of a social safety net than the United States, through social impact bonds. And he's a key figure. And so he has divisions of social finance that are in the United States. And then he also has social finance Israel that I want to go to in a little bit more detail. But it's always about framing the narrative. And Shai, as you had mentioned, so much of it is about managing people's psychology, right? Managing their individual psychology, their collective psychology, and it's weaponized narrative. And so in this case, what is being done within Israel is to reframe this social impact, which even in the United States and other places is being framed as a progressive movement, where it is anything but, because it is happening through public-private partnerships, which are really going to be fascist. But it's masquerading as progressivism, as social justice. And so in Israel, what they are doing is to subsume this idea of tikkun olam, of repairing the world, into this human capital management. So like, we know that there's tremendous power differential in place that's only increased over the past year under the lockdowns. It's being run by debt finance and technology and military interests, but they are going to frame that as just give us more of that and we will repair the world. And so Israel is on this threshold at the moment of being a leader in technology development, being a world leader rivaling Silicon Valley in cutting edge technology, and now onto biotech and nanotech. And it needs to continue to seek a larger global markets, right? Because geographically it's small. So its reach is very big. Its influence is disproportionate to the size of the country. So they have a very successful technology interest, but now at this point, you have to use the technology on something, right? The technology has to be used for something. And the something that is going to be used for is impact. And impact is really data surveillance and risk profiling humanity, and not just humanity, also nature and life and the environment. But to use the technology to essentially pivot us from a natural living world of that's connected into natural systems into an increasingly mechanized surveillance engineered world that serves the interests of surveillance and debt finance. So here's just an image. This is Sir Ronald Cohen. He went to Harvard, so he's part of this larger global financier crowd. Let me see if I can move this up. This is the first social impact bond that he created was in the United Kingdom. It was around the prison industrial complex. And so my thesis is what is happening now is the profiling of human capital is against negative externalities like prison. And so with the fourth industrial revolution, we are going to pivot to a global prison planet run by from space with these sensor networks, and that really they are moving to a position of getting us to psychologically police ourselves and to move towards automated policing with both facial recognition camera systems and robotic policing and drones is sort of where things are going. So we're pivoting, we're doing prison reform, but the reform means now the world is going to be the prison run by the impact investors who are want to sell us that what they're doing is a good thing.
A quick note, Alison, just to add, they've started in the last 1 month, let's say, for those Israelis coming from abroad, they are now giving them an option. They can choose, do they want to go to an hotel, or they can go home with the digital handcuffs.
Yes.
So like they're doing to pedophiles that go out of prison or whatever, they give people digital handcuffs. And now they want to do it from the age of 14. So this is like, I mean, just to, again, to emphasize what you said about this prison, this digital prison, which I'm warning people about since I started to discover about the 5G. This was like 2.5 years ago, maybe more, I don't know. We are heading towards a digital prison. And the prison is cities. The prison is our home, our flat inside the building. And basically, I didn't know that we are heading towards the corona. But obviously, the story of the corona gives them the I don't know if it's the perfect, but gives them a good enough reason to apply all this dark, I would say, agenda, which can be just for making money. But we know it's not just about that. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a huge point, because I think if we understand these larger histories of containing and managing populations, right? And, you know, as someone in the United States, I often speak of what happened to indigenous people and the reservation system of dispossession, containment, making people dependent on the state, and then not fulfilling one's obligations and letting people starve. Like that Agenda 21, like that's where we're pivoting. We're all, you know, sort of moving in that direction now that these technological systems are so advanced. And what better to force people onto a digital identity than to say, you know, this narrative that asymptomatic people, perfectly healthy people, unless you can prove that you've been processed by the medical complex, are a national security threat or a biosecurity threat. And that's, you know, that is the, you know, sort of their coup of people's minds that they have gotten away with that framing. But that is what's going to enable not just this preliminary getting you onto a digital identity on blockchain, but as you said, 6 months, you have to get your booster shot, right? So they will continue to be able to manage the population on the devices as through the sensor technologies, because if you'd stop needing to be processed in that way, they wouldn't be able to track you. And so that's sort of, where things are going. So I just want to touch base that these are the member countries of the Digital Nations I had mentioned. You can see Israel there right underneath Estonia. And the interesting thing about Estonia is that it is connected to the this idea of the digital identity. Tim Draper from Silicon Valley was a key figure in this Estonia makeover, and he's talking about sort of digital citizens and digital that we won't even have national borders anymore. You will just be an e-resident. You can be an e-resident of Estonia for the purposes of taxes and other benefits. And so that is what's coming. Is just, you know, again, I'm not a nationalist in that way, but the globalists are really looking to erase all borders for capital, but then contain increasingly people through geofencing and incarceration into very small areas. So I think we need to interface with the fact that this is, it's global. There is a center between Silicon Valley and London and, you know, Israel and what's happening with the finance and the tech. And so part of what I do in this is to look through people's LinkedIn profiles and see where people are coming from, and that surfaces these different projects. So, this one woman, Naomi Krieger-Carmi, who was with the Israel Innovation Authority, because this is all disruptive innovation, right? We're being totally disruptive, that she was working with the British Embassy in Tel Aviv, but they had started a tech hub. And so we can see, as we're following what's happening in London and with their health system, with the national health system, that there are close interfaces between what's happening with Israel and there. So we had mentioned about the 8200 unit, and that is the key within Israel, is that because of the military service, the government is essentially able to screen and identify people with elite talents in computing and engineering and mathematics in these technology sectors. And so there's the way it is structured is those people who have these talents are given support in their time in their, you know, military involvement. And then afterwards, there's a whole infrastructure of accelerators to then leverage that expertise into businesses to grow the economy. And what I'm saying is that the smart up economy, as it pivots to the impact economy, means we're all, you know, Israeli citizens themselves will be thrown under surveillance of the very machine they helped build and felt like it was helping grow their country's economy. So the 8200 unit actually has its own impact accelerator, which is very interesting to know. So not only are they building businesses out of this, but they are specifically building businesses that are linked to social impact. And those interface with health technologies, the health technology sector. One of these individuals, so, you know, I pull her out because she was originally flagged that some of the technology she developed were being used, this diagnostic robotics in the state of Rhode Island. And so her, it was like a health checker app, like you could have a health checker. But so here Israel's reached over into Rhode Island, and actually the Israeli health department was playing a key role in the Rhode Island health reopen. But her background is very useful to look at, because she was, I think, sort of a wunderkind in, you know, mathematics and data analytics. And she came out of Microsoft, right? So Microsoft here in the US is doing the QR code tracking for kids in schools. Then she became a data scientist for eBay. So auctions, again, we're thinking historically, at least here in terms of slavery, valuing commodities in free marketplaces. She's on the board of HSBC Holdings. So these are these big banking interests. And then she's then created the robotics company that can then, you just need to be health tracked all the time. And that's what Microsoft is doing to the kids in Los Angeles. Every day they have to like reflect on their health and report their health status. So, you know, she was on the board of the Maccabee Healthcare Services. She's on the board of the Securities Authority. You know, she's a visiting professor at Technion. She was a co-founder of Sales Predict price forecasting software. And so this one person, if you actually look at this person's trajectory, and I'm not like pinning that she is a bad person, but like within the scope of her expertise, it is leveraging her knowledge through government service into business and then advising across sectors of financial price forecasting, health data analytics, and securities exchange. And that's really significant, I think. I don't know, do you have any thoughts on that, either of you guys? To me, it paints a picture of how these pieces interlock, specifically the health.
I agree. And I mean, I know exactly these sort of maps that you are going to show now, they really show the scope of things. I mean, who is involved, whether it's as a partner, as a sponsor, as a whatever collaborator with this plan. I mean, it's in your face. I mean, you see the companies, you see the names, it's there. It's a fact. You cannot really invoke it, you know, just as it is.
Yeah.
You accept it. And I would say most people, and do something about it.
They don't know about Social Finance Israel. They don't even know it exists. They don't know who Ronald Cohen is. They know Bill Gates, no. Right? But they don't know the key players who are below the surface, I think. And that's what I'm trying to lift up. So these are the investors of Social Finance Israel. And one of the things that I use often is a website called Crunchbase. And Crunchbase has a fair, like it's pretty good at giving you information about when companies are founded, who the investors are, and sort of a nice overview. So Social Finance Israel, these are among the investors. And you can see Vital Capital is investing in biosciences. That's at the top. Bank Hapoalim, is that how you say it? They're an investor, and the former deputy of strategy, Shiley Spiegelman, was involved in founding the tech accelerator with Microsoft, Digital Israel, and she was present at this Rhode Island Israel webinar on e-government and with the Ministry of Science and Technology. Okay, so you have the banks, but the banks are being advised by people who are then running the human capital investments in the service of e-government and data analytics. We have Checkpoint Software Technologies.
You know, Alison.
Yeah.
Just a quick one. Soon there's to be another elections in Israel, and one of the guys who is running for whatever party, he said that Israel should be like Estonia. go on.
Yeah. No, I mean, you're the digital nations. I would say, I mean, how many residents of the 7 or the 10 digital nations realize that? Did anyone ask them, right? That's what I said, you know, who voted in Davos? Nobody asked us if we wanted to be the digital nation. It was just decided in some smoky back room, right? And so we have the cybersecurity. Clearly the cybersecurity area is going to be really important in all of this. Because imagine once you're injected with nanorobotics, which is, you know, what is being developed, and if that becomes non-consensual, hacking, biohacking, literal biohacking with injectable machines is not, you know, is on the horizon. So as bad as, you know, I have a friend whose email was hacked and then it hacked into her financial systems and these hacking, but once it comes down to your cells, like what this hacking does, so we can see in parallel with the biosecurity state is the cybersecurity, but almost to my mind, a cyber warfare structure. And then Israel Makov, so he is clearly involved in all of the biotech, health tech sciences. You see Teva Pharmaceutical, Quantum X Neuroscience, Sun Pharmaceuticals, Micromedic Technologies, BioLite, Netafim, you know, all different kinds. And then
Weizmann Institute of Science is a really renowned institute in Israel. Although it's known all over the world. He has contacts and he's getting a lot of funds from pharmaceutical companies. I mean,
exactly. And so now, I mean, the way I frame it is that this predator energetic force that is like an anti-life force that is coming down is looking to mine. You know, John Trudell is always, I lift up as a prophetic voice, the American leader of the American Indian movement, that there is this predator energy that wants to mine the being part of human. To mind the being part of human. And so what we have inadvertently created in our quest for economic growth is a technology that will then, it's imperative to mine us for data and to process us through a mining process, which is something that Trudell speaks of very greatly. And again, I don't know that any of these people, when you start down the road, think that's where it's going. But, you know, I'm here to say that that's where it's going. So, wait a minute. All right. So there's just Makov and Arnon again. It just touches on just, you know, biochemistry, pharmaceutical and nanotech. And this is just a little bit closer together, just showing the Shiley Spiegelman, these connections to Microsoft and Digital Israel and the Science and Technology Agency. And so these are partners in Social Finance Israel. And I broke them up into two parts so we can see it a little bit better, but we see Medial Early Sign. So again, they want to essentially frame the threat of pandemic illness as something that we need biosensors for. Like we need to have injectable, updatable biosensors to have early signs that we might be sick. And so this is connected to artificial intelligence and the electronic health records. Yad Hanadiv is connected again through the Rothschild family. And when you talk about education, the interface with education, you know, they're pushing open university, but really that is digitally platformed education. That's ed tech that is connected to edX and MIT and Harvard. So that is pushing this shift to managing you for online education. And then this Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, this is very significant, this Jerusalem Institute, the Milken and Innovation Center, because again, that ties it back to California, Michael Milken, who was, you know, a crooked guy and he's very into blockchain and tracking everything on blockchain. And you can see, you know, they're partnered with this institute, this innovation institute in Jerusalem with Citigroup and the Securities Authority.
Hang on, another thing, it's interesting to see the Trump Foundation involved in that. For those who think that Trump is a saint who is here to save us, just think again. I mean, maybe it's true, maybe not, but at the moment it looks like he's deeply involved, or at least his foundation is deeply involved in this social impact finance. Yes, another thing just to add that the Prime Minister of Israel said, I think it was a week ago, a couple of weeks ago, that he's planning to build two large vaccine factories in Israel for Moderna and Pfizer. But the most intriguing part that he said, this was towards just the last few seconds of his interview on TV, he said that we have to be prepared for the next viruses or pathogens. And this is funny because you mentioned the sensors. Is Allison gone?
I think we lost Jason. Her. she'll be back. I'm sure.
No, sure.
One person did ask, I can ask you a question while we're waiting for Allison. Joseph asked, if you get the chance, ask Shai if he's familiar with the Orthodox Jewish MD, Zev Zelenko.
Yes, sure. I mean, he doesn't live in Israel, Zelenko, but he was interviewed by Rabbi Amnon Yitzchak, which is a friend, and he's a close friend, and he's a great warrior, and he's a true rabbi. And he interviewed Dr. Zelenko a couple of times, I think. And what the protocol that Zelenko has offered, basically is taking the carpet underneath the whole story. Because if you can treat, let's say, if there is something which is called corona, and if you can treat it with something as simple as what Zelenko is offering, why you need the vaccines? Why you need the whole... this whole fuss about social impact and vaccines and sensors and biomedical data, et cetera, to be shared by people. So, yes, I know Zelenko, and he's a great doctor. And
hey, sorry, I lost my internet. They pulled me up, my internet died. Sorry about that, I'm on my phone now.
Allison, I just added that the Prime Minister of Israel said, just at the last bit of his interview on TV, he said that we need to prepare for the next viruses or pathogens. And, you know, to continue about what you say and what the foundation that they've been laying regarding the biosensors and where this is heading in terms of health and digital or technology, obviously, they are preparing more viruses, at least threats, if not real, just for us to be scared enough to allow them to take us into this world of digital medical dictatorship. And then it makes sense why they prepare all this foundation, because obviously it takes a lot of effort, a lot of money, so much time of planning in order to lead us to this sort of prison. And when you hear, you see, all the time they give signs, they give hints, they tell the truth, but it's how you say, entwined with the words, with the sentences, with the public appearances, you know, and the public messages they give. They say also the truth. There will be more viruses to come. I mean, he just said it, so you better believe him, because this is part of the plan. So they keep telling us the plan, like Klaus Schwab is doing that, Trudeau is doing that, Trump has done it, etc., etc. I mean, they're all saying, they're all telling the plan, so the people will get ready. And this is a psychological war that has been going on. It's mostly psychological, in order for us, again, to accept their agenda and their solution for the problem they've created.
Yeah, the final solution, right? Yeah, but nanorobotics. Well, and I feel like we're in this, like, it's a spiritual engagement. And, you know, it's easy. And I say this as someone who actually did not have a strong faith practice going into this, but I can see it very clearly this year that, you know, with the shutdowns of the, you know, churches and singing and gathering, that is about isolating people and separating people from nature and that those spiritual energetic connections. So yeah, contesting the narrative is huge. Connecting the narrative is so important. One of the investors, and Shai, I would be interested in what you thought, is this company called Patango. And that's where, is it Shemi Perez is involved in that? Yeah, Shemi Perez and Cecile Bilius with Patango. And Patango is connected with something called Mind Up, which is the Ramban Healthcare, Medtronic, and IBM. So again, these technology companies, the IBMs, because IBM is doing the Excelsior Pass in New York State now. So Microsoft is doing the kids QR code in Los Angeles, but IBM has got the contract for the New York State Pass. And they're working, this woman, Cecile Bilius, who's working with Perez on Patango, is part of this Global Impact Tech Alliance and the Impact Management Project. And for me, whenever anybody says, well, who are the they, Allison? Like, there's no they, it just happens. There's not a they. And I'm like, no, look, well, one is Davos, but look up the Impact Management Project, because those are the 2,000 largest asset holders that need to turn us into semi-robots so that they can control us for impact, right? Tikkun Olam, you're being controlled for impact by nanorobotics. So maybe you can speak a little bit to Perez in this, because I have a sense that he's also connected with Michael Bloomberg and what's going on with the rollout of some of the smart environments in Israel.
I don't know that much about Pitango and about Chemi Perez, but the little I know is enough for me to suspect him big time. And why I'm saying that? Because he's the son of Shimon Peres. Shimon Peres, I would say he's one of the, he used to be, now he's not alive anymore, but used to be one of the worst enemies of Israel. He used to be a Freemason, a knight of the Queen of England. He works with all the leftist organizations, with all the globalists. He has done so many bad, evil things towards the population of Israel. And obviously the media not necessarily shown this over the years. Chemi Peres is their youngest son, and he's involved in many projects, and obviously he's following his father's footsteps. And now, as I read just now, while you were speaking, I read about Pitango. And yes, and this is goes exactly with what you're saying about the accelerator and the social impact bonds. And this is like, it's there. I mean, they're partners. I'm just reading, you know, I'm reading while I'm talking.
I will chime in. So for people who don't know, so I'm based in Philadelphia, and part of what I started following money was around the privatization of schools, but also we're a center of medical development too, innovative medical stuff. And Wharton Business School, which is the business school of the University of Pennsylvania, is a key player in developing impact investing. And Wharton Business School has very close ties with Israel. Like they have very close academic relationships. They're back and forth. And then like Netanyahu, although he went to MIT, like he grew up outside of Philadelphia. And so there are these larger networks of power players, people who are operating in these spaces. You know, MIT is a major player in both the digital currency initiatives and the shift towards transhumanism. There's a lot of discussions about cybernetics, and even I've read articles that have talked about Israel being a center for transhumanism because it's so high tech. And I've seen this also in groups like with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, like certain spirituality groups are sort of saying like, we're so spiritual, we'll just become so spiritual, we'll be transhumanist, right? And so that is being targeted in certain communities, certainly not all of them, but there are these fringe outliers that would seek to use these technologies to, you know, in some ways, I think, go against the natural like system of spirit and the creator into this something that is almost like men trying to be gods. You know, it's making this transition. And I believe that this unifying force in this moment where people are so fragmented against one another is that if I can show up as a mom, if I can show up with other like women, this, you know, the month, you know, as grandmothers to say that we are standing up against this transhumanist future for the children, right? For these children who are going into schools, who are depending on us to act on their best interest, to stand between them and the nanorobotic plan, like that is what it is on us to do in this moment, is to take that step and to see it, to be brave enough to actually look at it for what it is, to see the horror, to not be sold in this sugar-coated package of progressivism, because it is not. You do not shoot up children with biosensors because you care about them. You do that because you are mining the being part of human. And that is the truth of what is happening. We have to see it. And then we have to revoke consent. We just have to, and it seems overwhelming. People, how do we go up against, you know, the largest imperial forces? You know, I'm saying this from the United States of the world. And I'm like, you do it from a place of spirit, because it's not supposed to end this way. And that's what I keep saying to people. And you know, when we connected, and I'm, you know, you're never sure on the internet who's who and whose motivations, but you're a good person, Shai. Like those of us who are coming from a place of heart and groundedness, have that responsibility. And I think we're finding each other in that work.
And first of all, again, I said it also on our first show, I just love you. You know, you're just so, you coming from your heart, you using your brain. That's the right way forward, not the opposite. You have to come from your heart, and you need to know what is good and what isn't, and then to act upon it. Use your brain, learn, and what you're doing, it's just an amazing work, Alison. I know, but let me just say it again. Your work since just in the last few months, I mean, I know you haven't done it for that long. I mean, talking about social impact regarding the corona and all this. I mean, just less than a year you've been doing that sort of research, and it already reached so many people, you know, just these little shows, because there's seeds of truth in it. And if I want to add to what you say, because it's so important what you said, many people are afraid to speak. They know something is wrong. They have children. They have great responsibility, not just for their children, but for all of our children and for our future. And they are afraid to speak because they may lose their work. They are afraid to say what they think or that someone is doing to them something which is immoral. They are afraid to speak up. And I want to tell these people, you cannot postpone it anymore. Any longer. You have to stand up and say, no, you do not consent to this evil agenda, which wants to mine your babies. I mean, it's unbelievable, but this is truth. And those who are dealing with this sort of information for many, many years, the conspiracy or the hidden sides of reality, which are now coming up to the surface big time. We are doing this work for many years, and we will continue in doing it, because it's like we are on a mission from God. We're on the right side of history. But we are waiting for you, those who are afraid to speak up. Please know that we have limited power, limited resources, limited time and energy and money. We are waiting for you. Please come and join us and speak up. It doesn't matter if it's on a protest or demonstration. It doesn't matter if it's on a video on one of the social networks. It doesn't matter if you'll be blocked from a social network. It's not the issue. The issue is to stand up and say, no, I do not consent. I'm a living man. I'm a living woman. And I say no to this evil agenda. You are just a corporation who would like to do cooperative things to people, to humans. And I'm saying no. We are in charge, not you.
We're in charge.
And it's time to stand up and speak the truth, because clock is ticking and we really starting to run out of time. And I thank you so much, Alison, for really everything you've done, everything you say, just spot on. Thank you so much.
I'm so glad we connected. And this is the gift. The thing is, when you are brave and you stand up and you say, I'm not afraid because this is on the side of rightness, you are then given the gift of others, of experiences and affirmations. Like, that is the thing. Once you take the step, that is what I have found this past year, is that you get back more than what you put in. And so, and just to be, you know, I just want to reinforce, my goal is that this is our work. This is the work. This is the work of life. This is the unifying work of life. And there are many, there are people who are doing this work of life and maybe not understanding all the pieces. And when we look at the farmers standing in India, and we look at people who are doing this standing, and we can't run from it. I think there were some people who were like, run for the hills and have a cabin. And I'm like, actually, this thing is coming. It is a global coup of the earth by artificial intelligence. The settler colonizer artificial intelligence is upon us. And so when we stand for all of life, all of the children, and all of the beings, you know, all of the bees, right? The trees.
All of creation. All of creation.
All of it. Yes. So.
And you know, when was the last time that someone in an interview like that told you, I love you, Alison? I mean, it's not something that happens normally in an interview, but why I say it, why I allow myself to say it, because everything I do is from, that's how I feel. It's from the right place. It's from from love and care. It's from grace of God and caring for other people and other beings, animals, bees, plants, soil, fungus, the sun, the sky, everything. This is our creation. And someone is trying to hijack it. And we are like, oh, really? No, it can't be. Yes, it can. Wake up. And I'm saying, I love you, Alison, because I want people to know.
I love you too, Shai.
I want people to hear. No, I know, because we are working on the same.
It is. It comes out. Like, we have to let that. That is the power. That is the heart power is what they're trying to cordon off, is that heart power. And that is what is the power. It is the power of love. So I love you know, I love Jason for making these spaces to have this stuff happen. I love I've found so many amazing thinkers, and we're going to try to build, I think, some sort of platform. We're revoking consent. They're trying to run our lives on micro contracts on blockchain, and we're taking it back. We're saying there, if you thought we implied that it was okay, we're here to say it isn't. But also from a place of love, because there are lots of people who have been harmed in being brought in, and it's not easy. So I think we have to find with open hearts to say, if you were on the wrong path, it's okay to wake up and join in at this point. Like, it's we welcome you. Wherever you are on this road, you can come back on. You know what I mean?
So I love you both too.
We gotta go.
I just met Shai recently, but I get your energy and I love it. But I have a question for both of you that you might want to explore. And I think we all need to kind of explore this, because it seems like what we're doing is not quite enough. And we need to kind of understand why that is. So the question is, what do you think the block is in people that's preventing them from seeing this larger thing? So my thing has always been that people have like a foundational worldview, and then they build their belief systems on top of that. And it seems like there's something about people's foundation that is preventing them to see this larger thing that's happening. In other words, they kind of take the philanthropists and the politicians. Yeah, they'll admit there's some corruption there, but they kind of take them at their word. And there's not an acknowledgement of just how bad things have gotten, just how corrupt the system is. And I'd be interested in exploring this more. Like, how do we uncover, what are your thoughts on what it is that's really preventing people from seeing, you know, what's actually happening? Either of you can chime in on that, but I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts on that.
My sense is that, like, the state, if you are someone who's lived relatively comfortably within it, with understanding that there's a social contract and that you're being served, it's not in your interest to like flip that and just ignore, like, look at, you know, I had mentioned about, you know, the reservation systems, right? To see that, like, if you were a certain people, that social contract never applied. And guess what? Now it's our time. And that's a hard thing to unlearn, because we're conditioned to that, right? Like, we're conditioned to think that our power is, we exert our power in certain ways, and that's at the ballot box, and, you know, it's by following all of these rules. And if we do that, especially the American bootstrap mentality, like, things will be okay. And then even when things increasingly aren't, to realize the whole structure you've been raised up in wasn't working to your advantage ultimately, and that the dispossession wrought on other people is now on your doorstep. And two, that you're implicated, right? Because we're all a part of it to a certain point. Like, we all went along to a certain point. And so if we acknowledge that it's not right, then we actually have to reflect on our own complicity from a place of, like, one, a reckoning, but two, not being immobilized by it. And I think a lot of people are like, I can't look because I will be immobilized. And so I'm just not going to look. I'm going to try really, really hard not to look. I don't know, Shai, do you have thoughts?
I think, in short, it's fear of death.
Yeah.
And then it goes into many other fears, that I may not be able to have a living, make a living. I may not be able to travel. I may not be able to have coffee in a coffee shop, you know. And this fear, it comes out of ignorance. So you may say it's ignorance, you know, but I don't think, I mean, it's the chicken and the egg here, because fear lead you into ignorance, and ignorance lead you into fear. And the government, or it's not government, but it's the corporations, or these 200 richest people, like sitting in this smoky room, like Allison has described with Dr. Kwan, yeah? I think it's his real name is Cohen, but anyway. Basically, these 200 guys, they know the human psyche, they know the human psychology. So it's quite easy for them, with all what they've been building for many, many years, to control our psychology. And very few people like us, like some others out there, they already see it, because they've, what we are saying, they've woken up and they are not afraid anymore. And if they are afraid, they may already see that they are afraid, which is a total different state than being afraid and not admitting you are being afraid and just reacting. So if I want to solve it, let's say, I think first you need to come out of ignorance, to know that you are being fooled, and to learn how you are being fooled. Then you start to think, hang on, all right, they want to take my money, okay. They want to take my house or my land, okay. They want to take my children, They want to take me, my body, my thoughts, my emotions. They want to change me. Now, once you understand this, you can come out of ignorance, stop being afraid, and actually trying or starting to find solutions to the situation. And the first thing is, what I think, is accepting that you are a living man, a living woman. You are not a dead entity like a corporation or a fund or whatever contract they try to put you in as a dead entity. And out of ignorance, you go into this contract because you think they are talking to you, a living man, but they don't. They speak to a dead entity, which is a corporation. So once you start to come out of this, it's much easier to stand your own ground and saying, stop, like Neo, you know, in the Matrix, stopping the bullets, because he just realized this is a machine and I'm a living man. I'm more than that. I've created that. I can stop it. So this is the switch I think that people need to go through. No one can do it for them. No one. This is what we are here to do, is to choose right from wrong, truth from lie, and living from dead. This is what we are here to do. I think that. That's it.
Yeah, I think that nails it. Beautiful. Yeah, the real versus the representation, you know, what's artificial and what's real. And I think that that's a real delineator right there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Sandra asked real quick, is the Orthodox community getting vaccinated?
I think it's more or less like the non-Orthodox community. I mean, you see, if the non-Orthodox community left religion altogether and they are now following the news, this is like the new temple. So with the Orthodox Jews, they are following the rabbis. Now, if the rabbi has woken up, so his community, they are in good place, because they say, no, we don't take these nasty substances and we don't consent to your bullshit. But if the rabbis follow the agenda because of whatever pressure they've been put in or whatever misleading information they were given, so then their community will also lead them. So I think, at least from what I know, yes, there's many people in the Orthodox Jewish community in Israel, but not just, but let's say in Israel, they are waking up, but again, by the thousands. But at the same time, there's many which follow the rabbis, who follow the health office or the Rothschild agenda or whatever. And then, like the non-Orthodox Jews, they are in the swamp. Like, again, half the population, it's more or less the same statistics with the non-Orthodox Jews and the Orthodox Jews.
Right. Jason, I have to hop off for my other call.
Okay, thank you.
It was beautiful. Thank you so much. And I'm sorry for the issues, the technical problems. We persevered. If you guys
hey, we are talking, we are living men and women. This is just technical.
Figuring it out. All right. All right. Take care.